It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT Kodiak on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in Kodiak, where it is 11 degrees under fair skies. At the airport, they are swinging west winds at 16, gusting to 23, and they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for sunny, cool conditions today, mostly clear skies overnight. West winds to 25, gusting to 30 today, and gusting as high as 35 tonight. Look for an overnight low of about 2 degrees tonight. For tomorrow, 30% chance of snow in the afternoon. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Barefoot Bakery. The owners had a soft opening last month, and business is picking up for the local venture. High-speed internet is expected to reach Kodiak Island communities like Port Lyons and Larson Bay this year. And Congresswoman Mary Peltola has been campaigning around the state in her kickoff for her re-election campaign. That plus lawmakers are considering tougher residency requirements for hunting and fishing licenses.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. The Pentagon says it's investigating the deadly attack on an American military base in Jordan on Sunday that left 3 soldiers dead and 34 others wounded. Deputy Press Secretary Sabrina Singh stopped short of blaming Iran for the drone strike, but emphasized that the U.S. is carefully weighing its response.
We do know that Iran-backed militias are responsible for continued attacks on U.S. forces in the region. And as the President and the Secretary have stated, we will not tolerate continued attacks on American forces, and we will take all necessary actions to defend U.S. military men and women forward deployed. And we will do so at a time and place of our choosing.
Iran has denied responsibility for the attack. Sunday's drone strike marks a significant escalation of tensions in the Middle East conflict. The House Homeland Security Committee is set to take up articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas on Tuesday. NPR's Deidre Walsh reports on the partisan fight over enforcement at the southern border.
The 20-page House GOP resolution outlines 2 charges against Secretary Mayorkas: willfully refusing to comply with the law and breaching the public's trust. A DHS memo says the effort to oust the secretary is a distraction from vital national security priorities facing Congress. Mayorkas is part of bipartisan Senate talks about a bill to address the crisis at the border. If the House panel approves an impeachment resolution, House Speaker Mike Johnson says the full House could vote as soon as possible. But even if the House approves the charges, the Senate is unlikely to convict Mayorkas. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News.
The social media site, formerly known as Twitter, is blocking searches for Taylor Swift. The move is in response to fake AI-generated pornographic images of the singer that went viral on the platform. NPR's Bobby Allen reports X is pledging to crack down on so-called deep fakes.
Fake pornographic images of Taylor Swift created by using popular text-to-image generative AI tools amassed tens of millions of views on X, the platform formerly known as Twitter. It appears as if the images were originally shared on the popular and controversial messaging service Telegram, which has almost no content moderation rules. In response, X has placed a blanket ban on most searches for Swift on the platform, which company officials say is a temporary measure. Swift is the most high-profile target yet, but researchers say abusive AI-generated images have proliferated online since the release of sophisticated artificial intelligence tools. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
At last check on Wall Street, the Dow was up 224 points, the Nasdaq up 172. This is NPR News in Washington.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Barefoot Bakery was one of the first Kodiak businesses to announce it would set up shop in the new downtown mall. The owners had a soft opening last month, and as KMXT's Brian Benoit reports, business is picking up for the local venture.
It's a dark and early Tuesday morning in Kodiak, but bakers are already running around to prepare for a busy opening. If there was a time for smell to come through a radio, it would be right now. The aroma of butter, sugar, and sourdough fill the room.
We're trying to get all of our pastries out, bagels, donuts, scones, cinnamon rolls, croissants. But generally, we've got a couple dozen loaves of bread out ready by the time we open.
That's Crystal Burnside, one of the co-owners of the Barefoot Bakery. She says she prepares the dry ingredients the day before, but is usually at the store around 4 a.m. to make sure all the baked goods are ready by the time customers start streaming in.
It's a guessing game almost every single day to try to figure out how much we actually want to have made and ready.
Anything left after they close gets donated locally to places like the homeless shelter or the police station. Chad Burnside is Crystal's husband and the other co-owner. He says this is the first time the Barefoot Bakery has been in the storefront, but they started making goods about 20 years ago when they first moved to Kodiak.
One thing we noticed is that if you wanted something and it wasn't here, you just had to learn how to do it yourself. You know, and just kind of that Alaska spirit, right, of ingenuity and do-it-yourself sort of attitude.
The couple says they started small with just a few items like bread on a table at the farmer's market. Crystal says over the years it went from a side hustle for some extra cash to the bakery taking up a significant part of their lives.
We went from one table that we weren't even filled to now when we go to the farmer's market, we have five tables there that are packed and overflowing and stuff stacked up.
The new facility now runs high-end commercial ovens, programmable proofing equipment, and large mixers, as well as stores hundreds of pounds of baking ingredients like flour. Crystal says while running a business can be tiring, it's a dream come true.
I think it's still kind of surreal. You know, I walk in the morning and it's quiet and I'm here by myself and it's just kind of, it's a feeling that I don't know that we can wrap our head completely around it yet. Just getting in and working and doing all of this and working in this space, it doesn't always feel like this is ours.
The couple plans to open the Barefoot Bakery even earlier at 7 a.m. and expand their menu to include hot served foods for breakfast and lunch. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
High-speed internet is expected to reach the Kodiak Island communities of Port Lions and Larson Bay this year as GCI prepares to set up fiber internet around the island and Alaska Peninsula. GCI's AU Aleutians Fiber Project has two phases. The first involves connecting four Aleutian communities along with Chignik Bay and Kodiak's Larson Bay to the telecommunications company's existing 800-mile-long fiber optic cable. Jennifer Nelson is GCI's Rural Affairs Director. She says Phase 1 work is currently being done in Akitan. The next phase will focus on connecting more Kodiak Island communities to fiber, including Port Lions, where site survey work is underway.
So we'll be bringing fiber from that main line into the communities, and so it'll come ashore, and there will be what we call a beach manhole, and it's flush with the ground, and it's just where the fiber comes out of the marine environment into the community.
She says design plans for the land connections and obtaining permits to do the construction work in Port Lions is ongoing at this time. The native village of Port Lions was able to pay GCI with a nearly $30 million grant from the National Telecommunications and Information Administration back in 2022 to deliver 2 gig internet to their community and five others in the region, including Chignik Lagoon, Chignik Lake, Cold Bay, False Pass, and Uzinki. In a press release, Native Village of Port Lions Tribal Council President Nancy Nelson said, quote, "The NTIA's Tribal Broadband Connectivity Program is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to close the digital divide and bring digital equity throughout the region and the state," end quote. GCI's Nelson, who grew up in King Cove, knows exactly how transformational high-speed internet will be for these island communities.
My grandmother tells a story of the day I was born. At that time, there was only one landline telephone in the whole community. And now to bring broadband internet speeds without our 2.5 gigs, you know, faster than a lot of places in the lower 48. It's pretty exciting.
Nelson says the first phase of construction to connect the communities of Chignik Bay and Larson Bay to fiber internet will start this spring. After that is complete, Fort Lyons will be next. Alaska Congresswoman Mary Peltola was in Juneau this weekend. It was the last stop on a statewide tour to kick off her re-election campaign. As KTOO's Katie Anastas reports, supporters praised her pro-fish policies.
The top floor of Juneau's Crystal Saloon was packed for Representative Peltola's final meet and greet of the week. Juneau Democratic Senator Jesse Keel introduced her.
She has stood up for the environment and the economy. She is pro-jobs, pro-family, pro-freedom, and pro-fish.
Fish, family, freedom has been Peltola's campaign slogan since 2022, when she won a special election to fill the remainder of Congressman Don Young's term. That November, she was re-elected for a full term. Her six-day tour across the state to kick off her re-election campaign included stops in Fairbanks, Eagle River, Palmer, and Anchorage. Peltola said she and the rest of the Alaska delegation, Republican Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan, have accomplished a lot in the last year. She pointed to an executive order barring Russia from selling seafood to U.S. markets after processing it through other countries.
That impacts fishermen throughout Southeast Alaska and throughout Alaska. And we did make progress on that. After 10 years of the delegation pushing that executive order, we got it through a few weeks ago. So yay, Alaska.
Peltola is a Democrat, but she's more in line with the Republican Party on issues like Arctic drilling and even gun control. She says one of her biggest accomplishments has been advancing the Willow Oil Project.
I am proud of the fact that I helped bring it across the finish line. I was the one who worked with the leadership in my caucus to really insist that Joe Biden meet with us. That was not a sure thing, and it was really a coup that we were able to get a meeting with him and John Podesta and two of his other staff. And the senators and I made very compelling cases, and I do feel like I singularly did push that forward.
But that wasn't a problem for many of the Alaskans who turned out for her event in Juneau. For Kevin Meyer, Peltola's bipartisanship is a selling point. He said voting across party lines isn't as surprising in Alaska as it might be in the lower 48.
She is actually trying to solve problems, not just trying to yell at people, and that requires reaching across the aisle. And this is a key gesture, and yeah, not one that I necessarily agree with, but it's cool that she can have positions that are different from mine, and I can still be all in for her, right?
University of Alaska Southeast sophomore Allison Kenny is studying environmental resources. She said Peltola's support of the Willow Project gave her some pause, but she still has her vote.
I'm stoked about her policies, especially with fish conservation within Alaska. My professors this semester have taught me a lot about salmon and their importance in the culture of Southeast Alaska. I've just moved here about a year and a half ago, so it'll be my first time voting in any election, and my first time voting as an Alaskan, too.
Fish was also a top priority for Juneau resident Karen Smith, a former troller and longline fisher.
I'm glad she's out protecting one of our mainstays here. Because if you have ever eaten any other fish anywhere else, it's not as good as ours.
Peltola's challengers include Republican Nick Begich. He finished third in both the August and November races behind Peltola and former Governor Sarah Palin. Alaska Lieutenant Governor Nancy Dahlstrom, another Republican, is also running for the U.S. House seat. Her campaign is backed by a fundraising committee affiliated with U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
Lawmakers are considering a measure that would tighten residency requirements for Alaska hunting and fishing licenses. Alaska Public Media reports that currently, to obtain a resident license, an applicant has to live in Alaska for at least 12 consecutive months. Then they remain a resident as long as they maintain a home in the state, intend to return at some point, and don't claim residency elsewhere. Sitka Independent Representative Rebecca Hemshute pitched the proposal to the House Resources Committee on Wednesday.
So they could come for as short as a few weeks. They could keep a boat on a trailer somewhere in the state, use that boat to live on for a few weeks, and hunt and fish as much as they would like as residents.
The bill, House Bill 201, would restrict residence licenses to people who are eligible for a permanent fund dividend. To qualify, you would have to spend at least 6 months in the state every year, subject to exceptions for military service, college students, and so on. Hemshute says the idea for the bill came from constituents on Prince of Wales Island. Several local fish and game advisory committees and local governments in southeast Alaska have submitted letters of support. Representative Kevin McCabe, a Republican from Big Lake, said he was concerned the bill would exclude some Alaskans who leave the state for more than 6 months a year.
I intend to remain an Alaska resident till I die. However, I also intend to get a motorhome maybe after I hopefully retire, drive around the lower 48 and see some things for the winter time, so I don't have to shovel piles of snow. And I would likely be out of state for more than 180 days. This would seem to exclude me.
Hemshute replied the bill is just meant to protect fish and wildlife. More than 10,000 soldiers will converge on the Donnelly Training Area near Fort Greely next week in preparation for the largest military training exercise of its kind. And as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, convoys will begin moving equipment into the area later this week.
Nearly all of the 11th Airborne Division's soldiers will take part in this year's Joint Pacific Multinational Readiness Center exercise, along with U.S. Marines and troops and equipment from the Alaska Army National Guard and Canadian military. It'll be the biggest such exercise since the division was reactivated 2 years ago to rebuild the nation's Arctic Fighting Force.
This will be the first major air assault movement for our 1st Brigade Combat Team since the inception of the 11th Airborne.
Division spokesperson John Pinnell says that's one of the Fort Wainwright-based units that'll be taking part in the exercise, along with elements of the 52nd Aviation Regiment and 25th Aviation Battalion. Other units are out of Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, one of which will arrive at the training area in typical air assault fashion.
The 2nd Brigade Combat Team will be jumping into the Donnelly drop zone from Air Force aircraft.
Pinnell says most of the personnel participating in this year's exercise who don't jump out of airplanes will be transported to Donnelly Training Area in helicopters. That'll reduce the number of vehicles in convoys coming up the Parks Highway to Fort Wainwright and then on to Donnelly. He says the division will try to minimize impact to drivers who already must share those icy two-lane highways with commercial trucks, school buses, and often snowplows.
Everything that we can to try to keep those hassles to a minimum, including, you know, spacing between the convoys, and we have pullover spots where the convoys will move over and, you know, let traffic pass.
He says the division also will try to schedule convoys so they aren't on the road during commuting hours throughout the exercise, scheduled for February 8th through the 22nd, and also afterwards when the equipment and personnel are headed back to Wainwright and J-Bear.
Again, we'll be moving things back in convoys, and again, we'll try to time those convoys so that we're not on the road during the morning or evening drive time.
A Department of Transportation spokesperson said Friday the agency will try to provide as much information as possible about problems that could cause delays on the department's 511.alaska.gov website. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Support for KMXT comes from Alaska's most advanced network. GCI's resilient and redundant network is keeping schools connected across the state. Details at gci.com/education.
Mushers pushed through 30 below temperatures to finish the 45th running of the Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race last weekend. As KYUK's Sage Smiley reports, a local legend took home his eighth title.
With the sunrise barely pinking the horizon over the frozen Kuskokwim River, Bethel musher Pete Kaiser ran his dog team under the arch to further secure his place as the second winningest Kuskokwim 300 musher of all time.
Looking forward to some warmth
This year's Kuskokwim 300, also called the K300, was brutally cold, clear, and icy. Kaiser won the race in 37 hours and 25 minutes. To secure the win, Kaiser had to beat three past champions and the defending Iditarod champion among the field of 23 racers. In his signature racing style, Kaiser's team had a strong second half. While other mushers surged ahead with a blistering early speed, Kaiser stuck to his race plan, building off his training goal of perfecting what he calls the dog's fastest comfortable cruising speed.
It's really kind of like you're riding a fine line to win this race. You're trying to go as fast as you can go, but stay in that safe zone for the dogs. And I think we managed that real well this year. I don't think we're one of the fastest teams out there as far as raw foot speed goes, but we're real consistent, and we try to put string together, consistent runs from start all the way to finish.
Kaiser wins $28,500 from a $185,000 purse for the victory. Willow's Matt Fahler finished about 40 minutes after Kaiser.
I just know how to get second place.
Fahler said he managed his dog speed well, but in the second half he faced the 1-2 punch of a challenging section of trail and Kaiser's team running at full strength.
The grass and the tussocks, they don't really care for that kind of stuff. So it slowed us down a bit, and that's when Pete kind of slowly moved away from us, I think.
Third place finisher Travis Beals scored his best ever Kuskokwim 300 finish in 38 hours, 24 minutes.
I mean, yeah, we're always learning. This is only our third trip here, so yeah, we'll be back and just keep adjusting and keep having fun. These guys put on an awesome race. It's such a blast to be here, and the Cusco's becoming one of my favorite races.
And why is that?
It's just the hospitality, the people. It's just really good energy around here. Everybody's happy, and it's just really cool to see that for the sport. Yep.
Four of the top 10 mushers were first-time K300 racers. But those first-timers include 2023 Iditarod champion Ryan Reddington and Hunter Keefe, who trains for Ramey Reddington's kennel and finished 11th in his first Iditarod last year. Sixth-place finisher Katie Jo Dieter became the highest-placing female musher in the K300 in the past 20 years.
It was better than I expected. I was nervous about all the ice, not being able to control the speed, but that actually was not that much of a problem, and the dogs had really good footing on the ice.
Dieter finished in front of last year's Iditarod winner Reddington, and she flew back into town through the final miles of the race in what she said was a move to try and stay ahead.
Went a little bit faster than I was planning on going, so I think they were like, geez, Mom was really calling us up there at the end.
23 mushers started the K300 in Bethel on January 26th. Five of them scratched, including the one musher in the running for Rookie of the Year. Queethlick's Raymond Alexi was the only competitor that hadn't already completed a 300-mile race. In Bethel, I'm Sage Smiley.
Boeing MAX 9 jets are back in the air. I'm Nabasafo with a Marketplace Minute. Alaska and United Airlines over the weekend resumed some flights with 737 MAX 9 planes. They'd been grounded after a panel blew out of one during an Alaska flight 4 weeks ago. United, Boeing's biggest customer, is now reportedly looking to Europe's Airbus to purchase more planes. The UN agency aiding Palestinians in Gaza is facing funding cuts after allegations that some of its employees participated in the October 7th attack on Israel. Austria today cut funding following the U.S., Britain, and France. The White House has released new rules aimed at improving pay equity among federal workers. The rules bar consideration of current or past wages when determining salaries. I'm Novosavo with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 29th day of January, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 9:18 this morning. It will set again at 5:27, giving us 8 hours and 9 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 16 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 47 degrees, set in 1930, and our record low was minus 16, set in 1989. I remember it well. Currently 11 degrees in Kodiak under fair skies. It's beautiful, breezy, and cold. Out at the airport, they have west winds to 16, gusting to 23, and they have 10 miles of visibility. Look for sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon and mostly clear skies overnight tonight. Just a 30% chance of snow tomorrow afternoon. Increasing clouds tomorrow. But for today and tonight, clear skies. High near 10 today. We've gone above that by 1 degree. Overnight low tonight is predicted at 2 degrees. And west winds are expected to be 25 gusting to 30 today. 25 gusting to 35 tomorrow. They are calling for mostly sunny skies on Wednesday and sunny skies on Thursday, with temperatures climbing all the way up to the mid to higher 20s. We have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will happen at 3:47 p.m. and be 8.1 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:10 p.m. of 1/10 of a foot. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 4:18 this afternoon and be 13.2 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:44 this evening of 3/10 of a foot in Larsen Day. Mariners, be aware, we do have a gale warning through tonight and a heavy freezing spray warning through tonight as well for our east side, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, out to 15 nautical miles. West wind to 45 knots and seas to 11 feet tonight. Heavy freezing spray today and tonight on our east side. West winds of 35 knots are expected tonight. Seas remaining at 10 feet. For tomorrow, west 20 and seas to 12 feet and freezing spray continuing tomorrow on our east side. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning through tonight and a warning for extreme freezing spray in the Shelikof for today and tonight. West winds to 45 knots today and seas to 11 feet with extreme freezing spray. For tonight, west 40, diminishing to 30 after midnight, seas to 10 feet with extreme freezing spray tonight as well. For tomorrow on our west side, west winds to 25 knots should come down to 15 knots in the afternoon with 5-foot seas subsiding to 3 feet in the afternoon and freezing spray continuing tomorrow in the Shelikof. Friends of Kodiak State Park's Board of Directors will be having an evening gathering to discuss plans for the 2024 at the Fort Abercrombie State Historical Sites Ranger Station. That's happening tonight, 6 to 7 p.m. Everyone's welcome to attend and participate in the meeting's agenda, and they're looking forward to greeting new members who would like to join this nonprofit organization, Friends of Kodiak State Park. Who isn't? Again, that's tonight, 6 to 7 p.m. at the Fort Abercrombie Ranger Station. And come by the Kodiak Refuge Visitor Center on Wednesday at 6 p.m. for a presentation by Bill Pyle and to congratulate him on his retirement. Bill will be discussing what refuge staff have learned about Kodiak bears over the course of his more than 20 long years as a senior wildlife biologist. Sounds very interesting. That's 6 p.m. on Wednesday at the Kodiak Refuge Visitor Center. Also on Wednesday, the rescheduled Traveler's Destination featuring Roy and Crystal Thomas's journey to Tanzania and Mount Kilimanjaro will be presented at the Kodiak Public Library. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday. Come and learn about their hikes and view their images of beautiful vistas. Again, that's 6:30 p.m. Wednesday at the library. Also on Wednesday, of course, is the famous Lego Club that happens at 3:30 p.m. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Thursdays at 10:30 a.m. is preschool story time for kids 3 to 6. And also on Thursday at 3 p.m., the next chess club will be gathering. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills in a cozy, friendly environment. No experience is necessary, and it's open to all ages. For more information about any of this, call the library at 907-486-8686. And coming up this weekend, The Outsiders, the teen drama adapted by Christopher Sergel from the book by S.E. Hinton, will be presented by the KMS Drama Club. That's happening Friday and Saturday, February 2nd and 3rd in the Drama Pod at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. It's only $3 for students and $5 for adults.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.